Friday, where I played for you excerpts from what I thought has been the best speech of the year. It was at the National Prayer Breakfast last Thursday with President Obama and First Lady Michelle Obama and Vice President Joe Biden all in attendance. And the main speaker, the keynoter, was Dr. Benjamin Carson, the head of pediatric neurosurgery at Johns Hopkins University, an esteemed medical professional, and someone who began life in a single-parent home in Detroit, earning bad grades in school. I posted the link to his speech on my Facebook fan page, John Carlson Radio, and on our KVI website, kvi.com. And I'll tell you something. You know what I did over the weekend? I had both my boys sit down with me and watch the entire speech. The entire speech is like 26 minutes, but it's so good in so many places. He talks about his life. His mom was illiterate, and he didn't know it. But his mom also loved him and knew what was important in his life. And what was important in his life was learning. So she would have him read two books a week, he and his brother, and prepare book reports that his mom would pretend to read. And he took him years to figure out that she couldn't read the book reports. But she knew it was important that he do them. Anyway, he went from there, as I said, to the pinnacle of success in the medical and academic world, Johns Hopkins University. He's received the Presidential Medal of Freedom, the nation's highest civilian award. And the speech that he delivered was absolutely outstanding, but it was unsparing, because with the president right there, he took off on the language and vocabulary of political correctness, calling it poisonous. He suggested a remedy for fixing the nation's healthcare ills, which is 180 degrees diametrically in the opposite direction of Obamacare. He talked about the concerns he has with the growing deficit and accumulating debt. And then he talked about our tax system. And this is something that was addressed on CNN yesterday on Candy Crowley's show.
I want to play something. This was Dr. Ben Carson. He is a world-renowned pediatric neurosurgeon out of Johns Hopkins. He was at the prayer breakfast, and he was talking about the idea of weaving the Bible into some objections he appears to have with the president's approach. Take a listen.
And when I pick up my Bible, you know what I see? I see the fairest individual in the universe, God, and he's given us a system. It's called tithe. Now, we don't necessarily have to do it 10%, but it's principle. He didn't say, if your crops fail, don't give me any tithes. He didn't say, if you have a bumper crop, give me triple tithes. So there must be something inherently fair about proportionality. You make $10 billion, you put in a billion. You make $10, you put in one. Of course, you got to get rid of the loopholes. But now some people say, they say, well, that's not fair because it doesn't hurt the guy who made $10 billion as much as the guy who made 10. Where does it say you have to hurt the guy? He just put $1 billion in the pot. You know, we don't need to hurt him. You know, it's that kind of thinking. It's that kind of thinking that has resulted in 602 banks in the Cayman Islands. That money needs to be back here, building our infrastructure and creating jobs.
Okay, believe it or not, Candy Crowley asked her audience, the panel in front of her, whether that was offensive or not. And here is left-wing Chicago Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky.
I think it's really not really an appropriate place to make this kind of political speech and to invoke God as his support for that kind of point of view. But I think most of all, the kind of message that he was giving shows a real empathy gap of where the American people are right now. And I think it's reflective of where many of the Republicans and Tea Parties are right now, that we need to have an economy that works for everyone.
Well, that, I think, was Dr. Carson's point. And it works for everyone when everyone is expected to participate. And where you don't have a system that tries to hurt people because they succeed, but instead takes an appropriate percentage from each according to their needs. Now, the interesting thing, you notice she said, I don't think you should be invoking religion to express that kind of view. And I said, well, wait, why wouldn't he invoke religion? Religion is the reason he holds that point of view. He's talking about the concept of tithing, of giving 10%. And he illustrates that by saying, you know, not 10% if you had a good year, but 10% period. And if you have a great year, it's, oh, now you can give 20%. It's you give 10%. Now, Jan Schakowsky is with the Progressive Caucus in Congress. She's on the far left with a few people like Jim McDermott would be the one she is closest to. But being from Chicago, she's also more obnoxious than most members of the House. And I think that she shows how out of touch the left wing of the Democratic Party is when she says, well, that might appeal to the Tea Party. It doesn't appeal to America. Because when I played that clip on Friday, I said, why don't we have more senators who talk like this? I think he's got it exactly right. He says, we need to raise money in this country. We need a system that is moral, that is a tax system that is moral and fair. And not punitive. Not aimed at hurting people just because they happen to succeed. Now, if you happen to succeed, that doesn't mean you get a break. It means that you pay the same percentage that you would if you earned half as much or a tenth as much. But of course, if you had a great year, you'll be putting more money in the pot. So to Jan Schakowsky and the left wing in Congress, that may seem like, well, maybe the far right and the Tea Party will buy off on that. You see, I think that would resonate with the average American. I think the average American wants to see more policies in this country that are rooted in morality, where the position you're taking, you can defend morally because it's the right thing to do and it's the fair thing to do. And here's why. Remember when the civil rights movement in this country held the moral high ground back in the 50s and 60s? It was because they were unapologetic about anchoring the civil rights movement to principles that were based on fairness and based on morality. And in the case of Martin Luther King, based on the Bible. What's the answer to this? If you're equal in the eyes of God, you should be equal in the eyes of the law. You should be equal in the eyes of the government. I mean, what's the rebuttal to that? And I guess today the rebuttal would be, oh, you're mixing church and state. But of course, since it was advancing what was at that time a progressive cause, today that would be seen as a conservative position. Oh, you want a color? You can't support colorblind equality. That's racist. But back then, again, when the civil rights movement held the moral high ground in this country, large majorities of Democrats and Republicans, of blacks and whites, believed in those principles of equality. The problem with the civil rights movement is that Democrats from the South were were stonewalling and filibustering what the majority of Americans clearly wanted. But my point here again is that landmark legislation was based on something more than, you know, the passing fads of the moment. It was anchored in a universal, timeless principle. And I think that we are crying in this country for a whole set of policies that are much simpler than today's policies. You know, oftentimes what is simple simply reflects that there has been some clear thought put into it. And fair. You know, George Will had a wonderful column over the weekend about whether or not it's time to break up the big banks in this country. He points out that the reason they got big in the first place was not because of the free market. He says, you know, government nurtured these huge banks by weaving a safety net for them and practicing crony capitalism. But he also makes this point that back in the 1930s, the Glass-Steagall Act, which separated regular banking from commercial banking, or commercial banking from investment banking, the Glass-Steagall Act of 1933 was 37 pages. Do you know how long the Dodd-Frank law is? 848 pages. I mean, whatever happened to being simple and clear? Because usually when government isn't simple and clear, you know what that usually means? They're keeping it murky for a reason. They want it to be less than clear so that they can then, quote, interpret and enforce accordingly what they think the meaning ought to be. John Carlson, KBI.